everybody. Raina here, and welcome to Book Banter. This evening, I'm pretty excited because I'm talking to Christopher O'Meara. He's been a staple in the literary community for so long here in New Orleans, and I feel like I'm bumping into him everywhere, and then he was popping up reading his works all around, and then he started a reading series. It's pretty amazing. And now we're here because he's translated an entire novel. How wild and crazy is that? I'm just going to read a little bit of his official bio. Christopher Luis Romaguera is a Cuban-American writer who lives in New Orleans, Louisiana. He was born in Hialeah, Florida, and graduated from Florida International University in Miami. He has an MFA in creative writing fiction at the University of New Orleans. He has been published in Passages North, New Orleans Review, Catapult, Massachusetts Review, so many other publications. He was a monthly columnist in Plowshares blog. He was the poetry editor at the Podunk Review. He was an editorial intern at Electric Literature, which is awesome. He's a Vona alum and was the 2023 Paraplus Fellow. I will show this novel came out like a few weeks ago, and I'm not, full disclosure, all the way through it, but I'm loving every single page. So if you have any questions throughout the interview, just type them in the comments below and we will answer them in real time. And without any further ado, I'm going to welcome Chris to Book Banter. Hi!
Hey, Raina, how you doing?
I am doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I mean, it's always interesting hearing your bio being read back to you, but I got away from any of the anxiousness just by the proper pronunciation of Hialeah, so thank you.
It is a special thing, like, being in the space with somebody else from Florida, especially someone else from Florida who doesn't say it under their breath. Like, yeah, I'm from Florida. It's a thing. We know. There's good, there's bad, it's all there. But much like just being from the South in general, there's good and bad, and you just got to be like, that's what it is. So, yes, I've been to Hialeah.
Yeah, hey, if you're going to be from Florida, you might as well say it with a full chest.
Right. Yeah. You just gotta lean in. It just is what it is.
Yeah.
So I was reading your introduction, and you do a beautiful introduction to this book. It has a lot of like translator note. Officially, it's the translator's note. And you just learned about this book like in 2020, and now it's just 2025 and it's totally out, which I think is like, I don't know if that's long or short for that process, honestly, when it comes to translation. Because when I talk to authors, they can write a whole book. Sometimes it's 18 months, sometimes it's 10 years. So like, how long did it take you to translate this? And how do you feel about that? Like, was that a long time for you?
I mean, it took me the better part of 4 years, which is a long time. I mean, the world changed a lot in the 4 years I did it. I had a dear friend, or I have a dear friend, Tori Bush, who at one point like gave me some calming words in the middle of it when I was struggling with how long it took, and that being like, you know, translation just happens when it happens and you can't like rush it. So I have no idea if it's long or short. But it definitely took time. But I mean, it's a project that I felt impassioned by enough that, like, you know, however long it took, I needed to get it out there. So,
well, and that's interesting too, because first of all, you're the first translator I've ever had on the show. And in 5 years, I love books in translation. And so I'm like, how is it taken this long, honestly? But it had to be just the right person, you know, it had to be the right person. But also, like, just you're saying similar things to what authors say. It happens when it happens. Like, you can sit down at the desk every single morning, and some mornings that's going to be great, and other mornings it's just not going to go in the book. So it's interesting to hear that translating is similar.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because it's its own art form in and of itself, and it's something that I've done in different degrees throughout my life. As I specify know, translator's note, but doing a novel is a whole other thing. And, you know, there's times where I sat down and I really was like, okay, I'm going to get this much done. And it just wasn't happening. And then there's times where I was like super beat from, you know, working or whatever, whatever. And I was like, God, I don't think I get anything done. And I sat down and it just happened. And so, you know, Dr. J says being a professional is doing it even on the days you don't want to. And translating was very much like that.
I feel that. There's a huge stack of books on the other side of my office that needs something done with them. And it hasn't happened yet, but soon it's going to hit me. And those are all going to get inventoried and organized. It's going to be great. Mm-hmm. There was one line in your translator's note that really stuck out to me. And I think it's a beautiful piece of example of your own writing, because your own writing is so powerful. But also, you know, the goal, I think, of this book and of probably a lot of translated work. But the line is, writing is how we keep our ghosts company. Writing is how our ghosts keep us company. To me, I feel that you hear a lot about writing being how the ghosts keep us company, when they come to us, whether that's a person from your past or an experience from your past or something like that. But we don't think about how we're keeping the ghosts company. Mm-hmm. And this work, I think, might speak to that in some ways.
Yeah.
How was, like, was it was important to you to get this story out? I guess that was a question as a statement.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when I first heard about this project in 2020 or about the possibility of it, like, I read it and I just, you know, you can't read this book and not feel empowered by the story and feel, you know, a range of emotions. Because, yeah, obviously, you know, any novel where the protagonist or one of the protagonists doesn't survive the title is going to have some downwards, you know, it's going to have some down moments, but I think there's some hope to be found in it as well. And I think there's some, you know, the power of the people is involved in it as well. And so I knew I needed it to be out there, and I knew it needed to be out there in another language. It had never been translated before into any language. Even though it had multiple editions, from Penguin in Spanish. And so, you know, that in and of itself made me know that the book needed to be out there. And in general, you know, coming from a Cuban American background and the power of storytelling, even if it was just oral storytelling, being so important from like an early age, like, you know, my family may not ever get back to Cuba, but like they were going to talk about Cuba every day and it was going to live through them through every day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started out actually as a journalist before I was a creative writer, including in my undergrad FIU's newspaper. And, you know, I knew the importance of telling people stories, of getting down the record. And, you know, that morphed into me writing my own stories and short stories and poetry. Mm-hmm. And in some way, this project kind of needed all of those skills, from the Cuban American and the Spanish background to the journalism background. I mean, there's chapters here that are verbatim newspaper articles from the, you know, the time of the kidnapping and the assassination. But also, you know, there is letters, the governor in the story considers himself a writer and he's writing letters at times. And mm-hmm. there is a lot of fiction involved, and this taught me more about writing novels than maybe anything else. And so this kind of required all of my abilities to get it out there, you know, but I think it was very important because, you know, Charras was someone who was taken from us too soon. And actually the author of this book, Hernan, passed this year. And so mm-hmm. the weight of being able to keep two people's works, you know, Charas's life, Hernan's work, like living in a different language and having it spread to different people who can now have access to it, was a worthy first project, to say the least, you know.
Well, and the idea of the oral tradition and the oral storytelling, mm-hmm. You're just passing down this story. And it kind of gives me chills to imagine you being such a big part of that, like, obviously Charles's life, and then there's these reporters and these people while he's alive, and, you know, passing and building, helping to build that story, but then the author telling it and sort of reworking it kind of as with that giving liberties with some fiction, and then you getting to bring it to this whole other like group of people that never would be able to, I would never be able to experience this book. I took 3 years of Spanish in school. I would not been able to experience this book at all, you know, without you. And that's amazing. To me.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing to me because, you know, I do speak Spanish. I do read Spanish. And like, I did not know this story before reading it. Right. So like the book in and of itself, even to a Spanish speaker, the original book shared the story with me that I would not have known. And, you know, I've been to Mexico and I speak Spanish and I love history and I just didn't know this story. So already the book in its native language was doing its work. But the ability to then pass it on so that more people can know this story and more people could understand how not only Mexico's history, but like, you know, the power of unions and activism and organizing and the history of unions and activism and organizing in a time when it's maybe more and more important and to know these things. And in a time where there's a lot that seems to be misunderstood about Mexico and unions and activism and organizing, you know, yeah, I mean, that is as righteous, you know, first project as I could have imagined. And I mean, it definitely added to the time because the weight of it all, you know, like I'm not just mm-hmm. translating something that like, no, these are real people. These are real stakes. But no, I mean, I couldn't, you know, I feel very blessed and happy that Abram and UNO Press entrusted me with it and that I was able to enter on as well. And that I was able to, you know, execute this project.
And I hope that this brings maybe we can get more information about Jonas in English, because when I was preparing for this, I'm Googling and everything is in Spanish and Google Translate, two thumbs up. Thank you for that. But also it's just Google Translate. So it's not, you know, an actual human being sitting down and like putting their heart into this translation. So I hope, maybe, I guess a bigger hope for personally is that enough people read this and they go, wait, who is this guy? And maybe there's a few YouTube videos that pop up that, you know, like, so I can experience it in a way, you know, the facts in a way that never would have been available to me before. And like you said, because I've clearly never heard this story. And if you've never heard this story, you know, I don't know. We could go on in that.
Yeah, no. I invite anyone in English to write about Charras, whether it's the novel or the human. I'm more than happy for it.
So, we do have a couple questions. So, Linda is asking, had you thought much about being a translator before working on this book? So, you did mention that you had done a little translation. Can you talk about that? Like, how did that help you with this, the translating?
Yeah, so I had done, I mean, in general, growing up in Miami and being, you know, the first Roma Guerra born in Miami, you know, it was, you know, you end up translating, you know, just in your day-to-day life, little by little. But I also, when I started working as a journalist in New Orleans, was right around the time that the Times-Picayune went from 7 days to 3 days, as far as paper delivery goes. And there was a lot of stories, because even 10, 12 years ago, there was a lot of stories about undocumented peoples and the mistreatment. And there was gaps in the coverage and everything in New Orleans, but especially there. And so I started working for NOLA Defender and would mm-hmm. interview undocumented peoples and start sharing their stories in a way that was safer and maybe a little more comprehensive than what I was seeing around. And so that's how I started translating. I also had translated a piece for UNO Press that actually didn't go in an anthology, but was supposed to, and that was how I started working with them for it. The idea of translating a novel had not really even broached my mind until this project, because it just felt like such another beast, and it was such another beast. Yeah. But I had been inching my way through translating from whether it was, you know, back home in Miami for some interaction at Publix to, you know, working interviews for articles or even meeting some Cuban poets here in New Orleans at Roger Kamenetz's house and doing some translating with him for their poetry to like slowly coming up to this moment where, yeah, I did a you know, the whole novel.
It is seems like such a natural progression to eventually get here.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I think it was probably written. I did not understand that while it was happening, but it was definitely something that, you know, it just makes sense. And especially this novel makes sense. I mean, I was working on this while my partner was working on her union contract. And so like, it just was, in so many ways, it felt like it was written to happen while it was happening, you know?
Yes. Well, and also, so I'll flip through this a little bit so people can see, like, some of it is written, like there's time stamps in throughout. There's a couple spots where there's like, it is written like a newspaper article. This is not just a cut and dry novel. Like for this to be your first big like piece, this is not, I mean, it's, I want to say not easy. It doesn't look easy. Like, I know anything about that, but it doesn't look like this would be this is the one I'd like to give a shot to. But as you mentioned, you have all these little pieces that kind of make you the perfect person to do it. Nice.
Thank you. I mean, yeah, like, you know, when I read it, I was so excited about it that I don't think I had properly analyzed how difficult it was going to be. Because, I mean, you know, it's going to be, we go from close third for most of the characters to second person for the kidnapper and assassin, to first person for the governor's letters, to newspaper articles. And it's 25 chapters and 14 different narrators. So we're getting everything from the attorney, from the Chatters himself, who was in pre-law, to the governor, to the assassin, to sex workers at the bar the night of a particular event that happened. So just like, it's so many different languages and, trying to, you know, kind of to reference, one of Linda's questions, trying to like get in the mind of all of them took a lot of work because it was so many different Spanishes. Cause you know, I have to like keep not just one character Spanish, but 14 people, and not just 14 characters, but 14 like real life humans who exist in this world. And so it took a lot to like get like the language and the rhythm of how they speak down and to translate it in English in a way that it sounded true to them in a language that is very different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're referencing, like, Linda has a second question, like, what did you do to get into the mind of the author or to understand the work as you translated it? So, you know, just, we're talking a little bit about getting into the mind of the characters, but how did you get an opportunity to work with the author at all before they passed, or?
So I had a brief email communique with Hernan where he very sweetly gave me his blessing and was very excited for the project. And he did something that is always great for any translator and also terrifying for any translator, in that he gave me utmost confidence and didn't want to mingle at all, which is fantastic because it's like, okay, like I don't have someone over my shoulder, but is terrifying because like, you know, you're now just, you know, you're on your own. So it was I couldn't be more grateful for not only the work he produced, but also just, you know, giving me, you know, that, you know, that vote of confidence. But, you know, but that also meant that, yeah, like I had to really work to earn it, you know.
Were you thinking about what his like vision was? Like, how did you get into his mind, or did you just focus on the characters?
I mean, I don't think there was one without the other. Like, I definitely noticed how he was writing this, and I noticed, you know, the verve and the energy and the force that he was writing so much of it. Because when you read it, like, you can't put it down. Like, there's just, like, there contains this just energy. And so, like, you know, you can't help but notice that. And I tried to keep that in mind in everything I was doing. Because it's like, okay, I have to convey the meanings, and that is the first level of the translation, to make sure that people could understand what is being said. But then I also need to capture, you know, this energy, because that's actually the heart of the story. The heart of the story is in the energy of not only just like the terribleness of what the people in power can do, whether through clumsiness or whether through just insidiousness, but also just like the heartbreak of what happens to someone who is actually trying to change things for good, but also the strength of when people organize and activate, mm-hmm. and commit to their activism and commit to demanding change can actually do. So like those three things are happening in great force, and Hernan is conveying that in great force in Spanish. And so I was trying to do the best to my abilities to convey that in English.
Well, and it is, it's writing this sort of line between you're following these individual stories, these individual bits, but then the thing, the magic of what is happening is so much bigger and is this sort of movement. And this is a really good example of that idea when people say it's a movement or power of the people, right? I think it took me a really long time to understand what that really meant. But when you are part of something that is really trying to move something larger toward this goal, it feels that way. And this book does. It moves in that way. And, you know, as you're getting the individual bits, the whole thing, at some point I feel like I'm with the movement, if that makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
No, I mean, it's you know, people like to talk about their books being a living, breathing thing, but you know, I mm-hmm. think like when you read this book and you have this book in your hands, like, and you're reading it, you could actually feel like its heartbeat. Like it really, like it does have such a verve and force to it. And, you know, this is probably the book in my life I've read the most. Like, you know, I've probably read this thing, I don't even want to guess how many times, but like, you know, but every time I read it, whether it was the first or the 22nd, because I was trying to figure out this one word, like, and how to best convey it, like, it was just consistently like, you know, giving you that energy where once you shoot, you just shot straight through because like it was just written with such force.
Oh, so that you bring up something that's like really interesting too, because when you're translating, you're trying to, sometimes it comes down to a word or a one line and like, what did they mean by that? And have the idea of having to reread a page over and over again, or a chapter over and over again, or something like that is I don't know, it's different. It's different than when someone's just straight writing it. How often did that happen? Or can you talk more about that idea? Like, you can't just put, it's interesting because you are sort of part of this creative process. But also, you can't just put whatever. You've got to try your best to get to it, figure out the original intent.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one I go back to the most often, where like I remember talking to the editors and publisher early on for UNR Press, was I left the word, but it's also an exasperation of yah in, right? Like, and so yah, YA, like, you know, kind of is loosely translated to like already, or you know, can be enough, but like in Spanish it just contains such a force, and it's such a like punctuation. And you know, something that happens a lot in this book too in Spanish is that it was very much like Cormac McCarthy at times in regards to the lack of punctuation. Like there was I added a lot of punctuation to make it a little cleaner in English for the most part. And so like the yas were really strong though, because it was like, you know, especially when, you know, used in dialogue, it just kind of gave me a punctuation, and it conveyed just enough in English as an exasperation that like there was no proper translation in English that would have not been clunky and would not have taken away from the rhythm of how people were speaking. And so, you know, that was, I think when I felt comfortable leaving that one in, and when me and the editors and Abram were like able to discuss it and like understand leaving that one in, I felt like I got like a level of confidence to like tackle these more. But there's a bunch, I mean, you know, you could tech in Spanish in a lot of ways, and this may be a little insider baseball for the Spanish speakers, but like in a lot of ways you could tech in Spanish is the opposite of Cuban Miami Spanish. In that, like, you know, it is 21 words for a sentence asking how you're doing, where Cuban Spanish is very much like New Orleans English, where we use two syllables for three words. So like, you know, it was very much a different thing that I had to like retool, like how to use and learn what to keep and what to cut, because I would lose English audiences, you know, if I kept a sentence as long as it was written, you know.
Right.
So that was a give and take, because you want to be true to what was said. You want to be true to like the rhythm of the conversation, but you also don't want to like have three meanwhiles in a sentence, you know, every sentence and lose your audience.
Well, that's interesting too, because like Florida, learning, that's where I took all 3 years of Spanish. It was very interesting. Like in the classroom, you would learn this long. It would be this long. And then they go try to go use that. And okay, so I have friends, we have family friends, right? I would try and go use it. I was like, I got nothing that you're saying. And it's not because you're going too fast. It's literally because you've taken something that I learned was supposed to be like this and you've made it like this. And they're like, yeah, but what I mean is, and then they would explain what they mean. I'm like, okay, so there's, you know, and this, I feel like this happens with not just Spanish, but like so many other languages. They're so much better at conveying feeling than we are in English. A lot of times in English, we will just, and I do it, I explain, and then I'll explain it again, and then I'll explain it again, so you've got it, right? Instead of, we don't really do that in a way. And yeah, Spanish, that I can see that. I like knowing that difference. And do you think that it was written that way because it was written or because the speech patterns were actually that way, like longer? Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. I think Hernan did a beautiful job in writing it in a way that felt true to the Yucatecan Spanish in the 70s, as far as I understand it, because there was an obvious intentionality in how everyone spoke. You know, it's not like Hernan kept one speech pattern for everybody. No, there was 14 different speech patterns. Yeah. And like, so, you know, while not everybody was always so long-winded, there was like a general vibe of like, okay, even, you know, when non-Yucatecan Mexicans, speakers are in the book, they speak in a different way. So like you know, I did my best to convey that in English too, where it's like, yeah, like, you know, when someone else was coming from out of town, which, you know, the Yucatan plays such an important, and it's such a, you know, the 32 states of Mexico are all very different from each other, and the Yucatan is a character definitely in this novel. And it's such a world unto itself, and it plays an important part when they try to, you know, and, you know, use people not from the Yucatan, etc. And so, like, you know, I think it was very intentional how Hernan wrote it, to try to be as true to form to everybody who was from there and not from there.
I love to travel and been to Mexico multiple times, but never that side. It's on my to-do list, my, you know, my bucket list. Okay, well, that was my question. Like, have you gone to that? to the west coast of Mexico?
Yeah, I really wanted to. I've been to DF, Mexico City, and I've been to Oaxaca. But like the next one has to be the Yucatan. I've spent so much time there in my head, and so much of it happens in the highways between, you know, Campeche and Playa del Carmen. And I have to go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then we have, if whichever one of us makes it there first, we'll make a list of things the other one has to do when they go, and tips and tricks.
Deal. Yeah.
All right. So as our closing question, because always this is the author closing question. So what are you working on next? What's up?
So right now, my poetry book on my poems about my trips to Cuba is currently in submission. So hopefully I'll be sharing good news with you on that in the not so distant future. And but right now I'm in the middle of my fourth draft of a novel. So that's my actual writing right now.
Yay. That's pretty exciting. I'm excited about that.
I'm excited about it too.
Good. So if y'all want a copy of Charas, which you do, the link is going into the comments right now. You can click on that. You can purchase it. We'll get it. I could even get it signed for you. That could happen. So, yeah, and thank you so much, Chris, for doing this. This has been fun.
Thank you so much for having me, Raina. You're my first full-on Q&A about Charas, and so I'm really glad it was you.
Wild. Wild. Amazing. Thank you guys for watching, and Linda for commenting. I really appreciate it, and we'll see you next time. Bye, y'all. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Book Banter with Raina. I have been your host, Raina Nielsen. Theme music and production assistance was provided by Hoodoo Phonics Productions.